2-1. Fuck it. All right, what's Cuddy family? Welcome back to another installment of the Tony Talks Podcast. My name is Tony, and of course, you came to hear me talk, and yes, here I am to talk to you once again, ladies and gentlemen, another week of the Tony Talks, and I'm coming at you live from the fortress of solitude of my very special guest today. A true, like I say, only on Tony Talks do we have the savage of savages here, all right? And I mean that in the most endearing term ever, all right? I have with me, to my immediate left, a true swole god, a true gun god, a true just all around. If you look up a one-man army in the fucking dictionary, you'll find this fucking man's picture, all right? I have the one and only Ariel Gaines and Guns Troches live. What's goody, Ariel?
How's it going, everyone?
Hey. So happy to have you here on the Tony Talks podcast. You know, a good friend of mine. We go back since how long, man? How long have we known each other?
It's been a couple, like maybe 8-10 years.
Yeah, I know. We go back since like high school, man. Like I remember, for those people that don't know Ariel, man, this guy is built like an absolute fucking tank. As far as I know, ever since I met the guy, seen the guy, he's been the size of a boulder. He's fucking swole to the goal. This man is just straight muscle and power and intensity. And right off the bat, Ariel, I just want to ask you a simple question. Were you born with the gains, man? Were you born with the gains, or did they come to you naturally? Did you come out of your mom's womb with a protein shake in one hand, a dumbbell in the other, or was it something that was built upon? Because you're quite cut, my guy. You look like you're ready to fucking kill a bear and probably eat that shit too, man. So let the people know about your journey into like your physique and this like this strength and this intimidation factor you have. Even though he's a complete gentle giant, this man is one of the nicest people I've met. But if you look at the guy, you probably won't want to, you know, run into him at a bar when he's had a couple, you know what I'm saying? But tell the people, Ariel, what can you say about your journey into the way you look? Because you really are your own person, a man's man, you know. So where did that come from? How was that spawned?
Well, I'm pretty sure I was born pretty heavy, because you know, every time I talked to my mom about when I was born, I was like, damn, I must have been fucking heavy as fuck. But I was a really fat ball when I was born, you know, just like everybody else. I think I was like maybe like 18 or 19 pounds when I was born.
Get the fuck out of here. That's fucking huge. I was born 14, my guy. And they thought 14 was fucking huge. Holy shit, dude. You said that so nonchalantly. Like, yeah, I was born the size of like 2.5 babies, but you know.
Yeah. But no, man, ever since I was, you know, a little kid, I always wanted to be, you know, the symbol of being a man, even though not a lot of people really know what that means. And I don't even know what that means yet. You know, I'm still striving towards that journey. But so far, I know that as a man, I need to be a protector. So I have to have that within my image. And, you know, I follow that journey since day one. I've always wanted to be that guy that you can look up to and just be like, you know, I can call on Ariel when I need him.
Yeah, definitely, because I know for a fact, I know when me and Ari were really getting to know each other, he definitely gave off this vibe of, like, a very, like, you know, a very comforting and protective guy. I know for a fact, if, like, we ever run into any trouble with some fucking thugs or some goons, we know we can call Ariel for the ones and twos, you know, to fuck everybody up and stuff like that. And but also you are a very like kind person. Like, you know, you have this like intimidating physique. You're very built. You're not a man who isn't afraid to get into a nice fist fight, a nice fist to cuffs, if you will. But at the same time, you are a genuine kind soul. So definitely, like, where is your mindset? Like, how are you able to be this big, strong, like, you know, really cut bill guy who could probably pick on like half the fucking high school, but yet have such the kindest soul? Like, where does that kindness and that need to be, like, you know, a very helpful, because you're very selfless, you know, you're not selfish, you know, you're always caring about the other person and always making sure that everybody is cool, calm and collective when they're around you, and you make everybody feel safe and comfortable and stuff like that. And that's very rare to see nowadays, because, you know, you always have these people that try to be like, oh, I'm this person, I'm this like strong, independent, whatever the fuck. Like, they're always trying to come off as something that they're not. But you've always been so genuine and just so about yourself, and I feel like that's why you have such a very free-spirited attitude, especially with the way you're going about in your life, which we'll get to in a minute. But where does that mentality spawn from? How did you become, you know, the kind, free spirit, you know, free-flowing kind of guy, you know?
Well, to be honest, I've thought about this a lot of times, because a lot of people tell me that. They're like, you're very, you're like the definition of a man, which there really shouldn't be one. But I think it all comes down to me being brought up the way I was. See, I never had my dad. Mm. So when I was brought up with my mom, she's like, you're the man of the house, so you got to protect this house no matter what. And my mom, she couldn't handle all that by herself, so she had to get roommates. And I was brought up by a lot of women in my life. So she lived with two other women. So I was in this household with three women. I was the only man. And they all said the same thing. You are the protector of this house. And, you know, as I was growing up, I knew that even if people don't want the help, I want to be there for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always have this feeling of wanting to help people, even though I shouldn't. And I'll get to that later on. But just, you know, I always had that definition of, like, if I ever become a father, I want to be a protector to my child. And I want him to see what it is like to be a male in this world. Or, you know, if I have a daughter, I want her to see how a real man should be towards her. So having these three females in my life bringing me up, they basically showed me how a man should act around women. And, you know, I guess that brought me up to being this verily, like, you can tell when I'm in a room.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to sound like I'm overwhelmed with myself or, like, over my head with myself or cocky. But every time I come into a room, people notice that I'm there, which is a terrible thing.
And But listen, I can vouch for him and everybody that knows Ariel, because trust me, like, a lot of people from that we went to high school, we listen to this podcast, which, by the way, shout out everybody listening to this podcast. Also, quick shout out to Denise, by the way. She's actually a local listener who recently just came down with the COVID. So we want to wish her a well and speedy recovery. You know, Denise, even though you're COVID positive, you're still out here staying positive. So we appreciate that. But nonetheless, going back to it. Yeah. I could vouch for that, because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to keep a stack, bro. Ariel, this man looks like he could fuck you up. This man, the minute you tell him you want to go, he probably have a smile on his face saying, okay, let's go. Like, this man's the definition of, like, a man who's ready to fuck. He's the embodiment of, like, a human grizzly bear, and I mean that in the most, like, endearing, savage way ever. He's like, the man's ready to fucking go. He's combat ready, but yet he's so calm, cool, and collective, and such a kind guy. And that really just shows the duality and just, like, the uniqueness of your character, because that's weird. You were brought up mainly by women, and you would think that, like, that would cause some feminine traits. And nothing's wrong with that, of course, but quite the opposite. That helped growth, like, this old-fashioned yet still respectable means of what it is to be a man, to be a protector, but also to respect the people that you protect and make sure that, you know, you treat them as an equal. Because yeah, like, you have the, listen, Ariel has the physique, the muscle and everything. He could have been a straight bully, you know. He could have been a bully, could have been just walking all over people, but instead he decided to be the ones that helped those that got bullied, and was always there for people, and was, like, at the ready at like a call's notice. So that's really unique, and that's really cool to kind of see, like, you know, just what can happen when you are brought up by women and, like, you know, brought up from a different, like, you know, environment and stuff like that. Because so many people, like, you know, especially with you growing up without a father and stuff like that, like, you definitely, like, a lot of people, that's like a negative stereotype, but somehow you were able to turn it around and, like, you know, help that kind of fuel the person you are today. What kind of advice do you think you can give people, you know, who are kind of in the same pathway as you, like, growing up maybe without a father and maybe trying to find some direction in life? What advice can you give to some people who are, like, who can be just like you, but who could also fall into the temptations of, like, you know, their vices and stuff like that?
Well, I've recently learned that to be able to understand who you really are, you have to be alone. A lot of people try to chase people, try to chase a certain group, or try to be, like, part of the popular group. But, and to be honest, a lot of people are scared to say that they were brought up without a father, which is crazy, because it's the number of people being brought up with fathers and people being brought up without fathers, it's completely different. Because if you have a father, you're kind of a minority in that aspect, because a lot of fathers just seem to bail out for some reason,
especially in the environment that we grow up in, you know, like, growing up in South Central and, like, you know, very black and brown oriented community, you definitely see a lot of absent fathers or absent parents, or even sometimes no parents at all, you know. So definitely I can see where you're coming from that angle, but yet at the same time you persevered. So go ahead, continue.
Yeah, and that's very true. So at the end of the day, you just have to find out what kind of person you are, you know, what values you hold. And at the end of the day, the type of people that you look up to. I was lucky to have a teacher. I'm pretty sure you know of him, Mr. Gomez.
Oh, Mr. Gomez. Yeah.
Mr. Gomez was one of those teachers that was one of those male figures in my life that I will always hold on to, just because he taught me a lot of things, not just in the weight training aspect, but how to look at life. And, you know, just, I never knew someone that you can never, like, you never met this person, you never really know about him, you never you were never in their life, but them coming into your life just completely changed everything around you. And the way they see things is such a broader way. So definitely you need to look up to, you know, who you're looking up to, you know, who's around you. Sometimes your parents might not be there for a lot of reasons, and you just have to try to find peace within you. And if you can't find that peace within you, you're not going to be able to find out what type of person you are.
Definitely, definitely. Because, you know, and that's a good thing, too. That's a very important message about, you know, like, regardless of whether you don't have a father, you can still find that father figure, even if it's like in the form of a woman or in somebody else. You know, people always have to realize that, you know, you can overcome your circumstances. Unfortunately, some people weren't born with the luck of the draw to where, like, you know, they had both parents and they had a good upbringing, you know, especially in the area that we grew up in here in South Central. That's just the way things kind of go. But you look at Ariel, you see a fine example of someone who was able to kind of make it on their own and still be able to learn from the people around them. And I feel like that's a vital thing that a lot of people need to do, is just kind of really listen to their environment, their surroundings, and take in all the good lessons and also even the bad ones, but know why they're bad in the first place, because so many people get caught up in that. And you could have got caught up in all that stuff, but you took the safe route. Like, you wanted to be a Marine, you were healthy, you were working out. Like, so this is a good way to try to transition to the next part, because, you know, like, with every new guest, I want to kind of get to know them and like where they come from, stuff like that too. So I kind of want to take it in chapters. And I know that when I met you, we were in high school, you know, you were a big guy, played football, played lacrosse, played a lot of contact sports, was always in the gym and stuff like that too. Like, What can you say, how can you describe, I guess you could say, high school Ariel? Like, what were your ambitions? What were your goals? What were you trying to do? And how were you going, like, what was your philosophy in life during that time? And what can, and like, looking back at it, and what can you learn from that time period, you know?
Okay. So for my high school period, I know you're not supposed to have regrets in life, you know, because to be a very successful person, per se, you have to have no regrets. Just understand that you have to learn from them. But there's one regret that I have, and it's not living in the moment. Mm. I was always ahead of time. I was trying to think ahead of where I was, and I kind of forget who I was around. And, you know, you just have to enjoy where you're at the moment. Try not to let anxiety or this weird phenomenon of being overwhelmed by people staring at you, or, you know, you being the center of attention, which is sometimes not even the point, but we all know how anxiety works. So just live in the moment. But for my brought up in, you know, just high school was a completely different realm for me, because I didn't think I was that popular in middle school, mm-hmm. even though I was, now that I think about it, because I had a lot of friends. And, you know, just when I was in high school, it was kind of a turning point for me, because, you know, I was the guy doing the sports. I was the guy doing all this other stuff, these activities. But I should have definitely just been around more often, you know, gone out with people, just enjoyed that time. Because, you know, now that we're in the present, we can definitely tell there's a big difference of high school in the real world.
Oh, definitely.
Because everybody believes that high school is like the epitome of life, which is completely nonsense. But yeah, man, high school taught me a lot by how I am and who I am. And definitely I learned that I definitely need solitary every now and then. And I'm pretty sure every man needs this. And I say man because, you know, we have a lot of testosterone. And this testosterone can get overwhelmed. And it makes us very unpredictable, which it's kind of a downfall. But that's why that solitary within our life, and it's so important, because you get to read who you are. You get to analyze the things you've done and why you do them. And you get down to the core of why you are the way you are. So if you're a guy out there and, you know, you're kind of lost, you don't know where to go, your father was not around, you know, your mother is kind of telling you how to live, and, you know, you just got to find a quiet place and understand how you really think things through and how you are.
Damn, bro, that's a deep ass fucking answer. Look at this. See, and that's a prime example of why I'm so happy Ariel's on this podcast, because he's a prime example of someone who, like, the way he was brought up and the way he looks, you'd always paint him as like a stereotype. This guy's like, oh, all he does is go to the gym, eat fucking raw steak, and everything is either be a fucking man, rub some dirt on it, or fuck off. But no, like, Ariel is very aware of his environment, his upbringing, and the people around him, and basically the situation that he's in. You know, he's not letting you know, the stereotypes or the situations that he's been put into, like, affect who he is as a person. And I feel like that's very important, because so many people are so caught up in their environments in such a bad way, to where they're like, oh, I'm just a product of my environment. I'm like, well, hey, Ariel came from that same environment. Look at him. He's like a well-off fucking, you know, strong dude with a good heart who does a lot of amazing things, because you've been doing a lot since after high school. Like, yeah. I think right now, if I'm not mistaken, you're working security?
Yeah.
And security. Yeah, so talk about that a little bit, because you don't just do, like, this isn't like your fucking top flight Friday security, like, you know, just at the parking lot. This man does, like, secret agent, like, type shit, like, some type of, like, yo, I got to carry a Glock type situation. So what can you talk about that? Like, how did you get, like, kind of mixed into that? Because I know you wanted to be a Marine, and unfortunately that kind of fell through. So I guess that can kind of be the next question. Like, what was it like trying to be a Marine? And then after the Marines, you know, how were you able to find new life with this form of security? Because although it's not the Marines, it's still like an environment in which you definitely seem to favor, you know, the type that's like has to deal with like action and stuff like that too. And he only likes to do that because that's just the protective nature in him, you know, like your security, but you're like a special form of security where you like are, you know, securing very important people and things like that. And that kind of really just shows like your upbringing and how you still have that protective mentality. So what can you tell us going into like how you got, you know, caught up into security and like maybe even going into like your time and trying to get into the armed forces and stuff like that?
Well, I lasted in the Marine Corps for, you know, a couple of months. Mm-hmm. I was kicked out. For the people that are wondering, because I do get this question a lot when I reunite with certain old friends, I was kicked out because I wasn't born here. I'm under DACA.
Oh.
And, you know, I was born in Honduras. I was brought here when I was 4 years old, turned 5 here. But a certain president passed a law that said that if you're a foreigner, you can't join the military. Mm. So even though I did pay a lot of money for my waiver to go into the Marine Corps, I was kicked out at the end of the day.
Sorry. I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm gonna say it right now. Shame on this fucking goddamn armed forces for throwing away such a great fucking. I'm gonna tell you right now, this man is a true definition of a fucking soldier, and I mean that in the most enlightening and most dearest term ever. Like, this guy is a stone cold killer when he needs to be, but a kind, you know, well off, you know, like nice guy with a good heart who has a head on his shoulders. So the fact that he was not able to serve a country that has given him a great opportunity to be all that he could be just shows you where the problem lies in this fucking country. I didn't want to get political, you know, but at the end of the day, we gotta point out what happened, you know, because honest to God though, Ariel, I look at you, I know for a fact you would have been, and I haven't done any armed forces, so I'm not out here trying to justify like my opinions, but in my opinion, you would have made a damn fine soldier. And the fact that you weren't able to get that opportunity because of some stupid laws from people who probably even ever haven't seen a fucking battlefield in their entire fucking lives, it's just a goddamn disgrace. But nonetheless, you're still able to persevere and still able to serve somebody and serve people in some way. So continue.
Yeah, it did suck for a moment, but I have to give it to my mom for, you know, she was very upfront about it. And this is another thing, going a little bit back, you have to have a strong household to be able to understand really bad upcomings. Mm-hmm. My mother basically told me that I have two options when I came back. She's like, I know you're very depressed because this is what you wanted to do. There's not a lot of opportunities you have. Before DACA came, and she told me, she's like, you can either just sleep in that bed all day as you are, or you can go out there and make a difference. You know, no matter what you have, what cards you're holding at the moment, you can always make a difference. It doesn't matter where you're at or how you're doing in life or what your precision is or where you were born. There's always something that you can do to make things better. So at that moment, I was like, you know what? I don't know what I'm good at. You know, the Marine Corps was my plan A. I didn't have a plan B. And I just worked, you know. I got a shitty job in downtown, which taught me a lot. I was a box boy. I would go all over downtown boxing up stuff, giving it to people. And I learned that I completely hated that job. Mm. And that gave me a lot of creativity in my head. So I was able to learn that security stuff came very easy to me. So I partnered up with one of my old friends. You know, I got a certificate via the sheriff's department, which is I got my concealed carry, my carry. I got some other permits that I needed to go into security.
So to make a long to justify what he just said right now and kind of put a little seasoning on that, the boy Ariel packing.
Yeah.
He packing heat. All right, this man is trained in the firearms, hand-to-hand combat. This man is a true definition of a fuck. Like I said, United States Marine Corps, you done fucked up. You done let go a straight. You let go the reincarnated fucking soul of Rambo, because I'm going to tell you right now, this man, I'm in his Fortress of Solitude. We got guns. We got whiskey. We got knives. We got axes. This is a true definition of a man's. I feel my beard growing at every second just being in this room, because it is the embodiment of someone who is ready to fight. Fight for what? For their country. Fight for who? For the people. And the fact that he wasn't given the opportunity, shame, shame, shame. But you know what? Security gave him a new lease on life, because he was able to do some crazy, cool, crazy shit. Let him know about the security gig and the stories, man, because you had stories. Let him know.
So a lot of people see security guards as, you know, just a rent cop. I never wanted to be the dude that just stands at the door, checks receipts.
He's a rent-a-savage, not a rent-a-cop. You feel me?
Yeah, so I wanted to get more deeper into what I can do in the security field, which is very broad for most people, because if you tell somebody, oh, I'm just a security officer, they assume that you're just some guy at a, you know, 7-Eleven with a gun or without a gun.
Yeah,
I'm fucking or some crazy dude at a fucking Target, which is funny because I worked at Target, and that's what started my entire, you know, journey into
Endeavor
security.
Security, yeah.
Yeah. So at the moment, I'm, I can't really say what company for, but I'm an undercover for a certain company.
Top secret. So I need to know bases, and y'all do not need to know.
Yeah, I can't say what company I'm working for because of, you know, certain reasons, but I'm an undercover. You know, I just chill, pretend to be a customer, and I stop people whenever they're stealing. But my career version of security job is I'm in executive protection. I work for Academy. It used to be, I can't say the other name because of, you know, purposes.
Top secret.
But, you know, Academy is a very good company. They have a bad reputation in other forms, but because of Academy, I was able to do certain things, and I became an executive protection officer, which allows me to carry a gun, conceal weapons. You know, I have a client. Well, I have various clients that I attend to, but so far as of now, all I'm doing is security work. It's opened up my eyes to how much more money you can make as a security officer than serving your country as a Marine.
Hey.
But at the end of the day, you know, being a Marine, that title, earning that title would have been the greatest achievement in my life, no matter what.
Because it meant something to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the whole embodiment of Ariel's spirit, is the fact that he just wants the title of someone who is a soldier. You know, someone who is there, who is the embodiment of protection, security, safety, and peace of mind. And that's why you went into security gig. And you actually, you know, you secure a lot of important people. And you even got a couple certain gigs, like, in very unique in certain situations. Like, yeah. Tell us about some of the, I mean, because you said, like you said earlier before we recorded, you said you don't have that many crazy stories. But from the stories you told me, they were quite fucking crazy. Like, what can you say have been some of your crazy experiences as a security guard in terms of what you do? Because like I said, don't let the title fool you. Security guard is not, this man is not Paul Blart. He's not Paul Blart Mall Cop. This man is like fucking taking Liam Neeson, fucking like protect you from like fucking assassination type shit. So let him know, man, what you're about, and let the clientele that you know, to the extent of what you can say, because I understand top secret on a need to know basis. But what can you tell the people about, you know, a day in the life of someone who does security at your level, because you're at a very exclusive high-end level. So let the people know, put them on game, let them know you're not about just this whole, don't let the badge and the mall, like I said, no Paul Blart shit, bro. All right. Only straight fucking special ops. Let them know.
All right, so there's a current gig that I have right now for a VIP. I got this job in the rear. It was the weirdest way you can get a job, and I was for sure, at the moment when I did what I did, I was for sure that I was going to lose the job. I have a client. He owns a couple of oil companies. He wanted protection towards his son because, you know, if you're an owner of a lot of companies, people will understand that you have a lot of wealth.
Money, 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 money.
And money. The easiest way to get that wealth from you is to go towards your family. He has a son that's very active in the party world. So, you know, he wanted someone to watch over him, someone that can follow him, you know, teach him certain things. So the day of my interview with this certain client, we were going over about a bunch of certain things that he likes to do. Well, his son likes to do, his day-to-day schedule. So to make a long story short, it came to a point where I was like, you know, I understand your son likes to waste a lot of money that you've made. I also understand that he doesn't work and doesn't understand what it's like to have an actual job because, you know, he was brought up in this world of wealth. And the minute we were talking about that stuff, his son walks into the room and, you know, starts demanding money from his father in front of me, which I thought it was completely rude, just the way he came up of.
Hella entitled privilege. I said, like, Dad, I need money, like, now. Give me money now. Da, da, da.
So, you know, the way I was brought up was, like, you always show adults respect, no matter if they're being rude to you or not. So I found this very insulting. And just the way he kept insulting his dad, asking for money, kind of pissed me off. So I ended up slapping his son. And I told him that he should show a lot more respect towards his father, especially when he's doing all this stuff to make your life better. He asked his son to leave the room. I was more than certain that he was going to fire me that moment. Like, just, you know what? You're fired. I'm gonna pursue a lawyer towards you because you hit my son and all this stuff. But no, at the end of the day, he hired me because, you know, he said that I have a strong hand. And at the end of the day, he wants his son to learn how to be a better man. And, you know, I got lucky that he didn't pursue a lawsuit because I would have lost towards a person with that much money. But he gave me the job. He gave me the opportunity. And so far, this has been the best gig that I have.
So let it be known, ladies and gentlemen, just how much of a fucking savage this man Ariel is. He slapped the son of his fucking client in the face in front of him. And instead of getting fired, sued, or basically thrown out the fucking building, he got what? The fucking job on site. You heard that right, bro. Your ears are not deceiving you. This man got a fucking gig from slapping his fucking contractor's fucking son. That's fucking crazy, but that just shows you the reality of what he does, because like I said, this isn't no fucking Paul Blart Mall security. He is the true embodiment of the quote, he gets dirty so the world stays fucking clean. Because this man is packing heat. Listen, I don't want to blow you out and like let people know what you're carrying in terms of your whole arsenal, but in terms of what you're packing and the abilities you have in terms of combat and armed weaponry, like what's your background? What can you do? Because like I said, this man Ariel's a savage. He's not just some guy out here with the fisticuffs and the little pocket knife. The man's packing some serious weaponry. So let him know, man. What you about?
All right. So when I carry guns, I don't see the gun as the, you know, the first thing to act on. I see my Glock or, you know, a 9mm or one of my ARs. I see them as the last resort. The use of any weapon should be always the last resort. So ever since I was a kid, my mom knew that I was very energetic. So she put me in a lot of martial arts. I did a lot of, Taekwondo. I did a lot of Jiu-Jitsu. Basically a bunch of martial arts that I did. I was able to, you know, get a pretty high belt on a lot of stuff. I have a black belt in kickboxing. I have a black belt in boxing. I have a black belt in Taekwondo. And a lot of these things, they've not only shown me that I much rather be a warrior living as a farmer than a farmer living in the war.
Real quick, because I'm going to call it right now. Yeah. Ariel for UFC or Bellator MMA. I'm just saying, in the future, but nonetheless, continue. He's calling it now, though, so if anybody sees it in the future, let it be known. I called it first.
Honestly, I've thought about it, you know, becoming a professional.
I can believe it. You're a savage. Yeah. You can fuck me up, and you probably can fuck up half the guy. You can fuck up this whole block if you wanted to.
Yeah, I do enjoy fighting. I'm not going to lie. That's one of the greatest aspects of, you know, understanding that you can do a lot of damage to people. And that's kind of one of the things that I want to talk about in this podcast is that you need a good foundation. Mm-hmm. If you're a parent out there, you know, an only mother, an only father, just a child that, you know, you're in the orphanage, Understand that you need a strong code in your foundation, because at the end of the day, if you think that you can take on the world by yourself, you're completely wrong. This world will break you down completely to your knees and
to the core,
and you won't even understand how fast that happened. So understand the people that you're fighting for. Don't just fight for yourself, fight for other people. But yeah, you know, I've done a lot of martial arts, and at the end of the day, I know that I can carry myself hand to hand, and I try to, you know, I try to use verbal judo, which is something that they teach you, which is completely funny, but understanding that the way
you... what is that? Go into detail with that, because at first I heard that shit.
Verbal judo is the easiest way to get out of certain situations. So if I understand that you're drunk, you're aggressive, and I'm not drunk, I'm sober, and I have a gun on me. You don't have a gun on you. I have a bunch of black belts on me, which means that if I knock you out, I will go to jail. So verbal judo comes in where you're being aggressive. So I'm going to talk you down, you know, try to get to you to the core where you understand that you're being obnoxious, you're breaking the law. So I'm going to calm you down. I'm going to talk to you, you know, sort of you back down and not use any type of physical force. So I try to use verbal judo throughout my entire day, no matter what the situation. If I'm working or I'm not, I try to talk to people before I act physically.
So let me get this straight. You have an entire fighting form where there's zero fists or contact, period. It's all mental and verbal. That's everybody's over here talking about Bruce Lee with the one-inch punch. This man doesn't even have a punch, period. This man has verbal punches. That's crazy. How are you able to maintain that cool? Because I know for a fact a motherfucker's coming at me foul, bro. I'm sweating. Listen, I don't got a black belt like you, but a motherfucker be hitting the punch back every goddamn day, working on my jabs, my hooks, my fucking body shots, and the whole shebang. So if a motherfucker want to go down, call me Oscar De La Hoya, because guess what? I'm pulling the gloves on and swinging. But nonetheless, like, how are you able to maintain that type of, like, calm mentality? Because, like, especially with what you do, it's like it involves a very strong state of mind and a strong will to, like, be very resistant on, like, certain contacts. Because although you do get into some crazy shit, it's only as a form of, like, last resort. So fill the people in on, like, your means of maintaining your cool, but yet being always ready for combat. So do that while I go take a leak.
Yeah. So my job as an executive protection officer, I have to understand that me attacking somebody is not going to make a difference. You know, you can teach people with certain situations that happen in their life. So what you want to do is basically you want to talk them down, you know, talk them down to where they understand that they're being, you know, obnoxious towards other people. They're too intoxicated and they're about to get hurt. So, you know, you basically bring them down to earth where they can understand that if you continue the way you're acting, I will break something on you, or I will, you know, I'm going to hurt you, and, you know, you're going to go to jail. And all these precautions are going to happen. So you basically talk people down. And that's what I've learned to use. Learn how to control the storm that I hold within myself before, you know, unleashing it on this person when I can just use my words. And I know it sounds a lot of, like, bullshit, because a lot of situations don't just allow you to talk through them. But at the end of the day, that's the most modern way to handle things, especially now when everybody wants to sue when you put hands on them. Even if they're the wrong person, especially here in California, even robbers get away with crimes. So you have to learn how to talk to people before you just go full-on physical.
Shout out our shitty local government for fucking, you know, putting that fucking bullshit law into play. But listen, nonetheless, we're going to have our guests take a quick piss break. But listen, I'm going to still be here right now and talk your ear off, because that's the way the podcast goes. We don't stop. I mean, technically speaking, we can kind of pause this, but it's all right. You know, it's all good. The vibes, honestly, have been really good. And I'm so glad that Ariel's actually my guest for this week, because I've been trying to have this guy on for a cool while, because he's a guy that I definitely look up to in terms of someone who's very inspirational and, you know, someone who is definitely a role model in terms of how to be. Because, like I said, this man is the true embodiment of a man in all the most positive terms. Because nowadays you see people talking about, oh, he's a man, he's acting machismo, he's acting this, that, and that. Like, no, like this man, Ariel, is very respectful, and he has all the good qualities of what it is to be a man, and but also still enough common sense and enough decency to know, like, to treat everyone with respect and to treat everyone as an equal. And that's the reason why I feel like Ariel is such an approachable guy and someone who I definitely value as a friend, and I can definitely see being such someone who is popular, because he's popular in the sense of, like, he's popular because he's definitely genuine with the way he acts and stuff like that. And he just came back from the restroom, so I'll finish, you know, sucking his dick off later, because I've been saying another kind words from you and everything like that too, but nonetheless. So before we I take my piss break and your piss break, we were going into some crazy endeavors into security. So you were talking about how you slapped one of your client's sons, and that's how you got the gig. Yeah. Do you have any other stories that can kind of, like, you know, either match or kind of, like, you know, let people know about how, you know, crazy your line of security is? Because, like I said, it's a unique form of security. So, like, do you have any other stories in mind?
A crazy one that most people would enjoy is the one that happened recently. You know, at the certain store that I work at as an undercover shopper, this gentleman decided to steal, you know, petty amount of stuff, some $60 headphones, you know, some tools for work. The whole total came up to like maybe like $400. But he walks up to the register, noticed that there's no guard at the door. So he's like, you know, no one's going to notice me walk out. So as he's walking out, this, you know, 54-year-old cashier decides to stop him, you know, being a good Samaritan. And this guy decides to, like, push her down, not knowing that this person of age can easily break her bones. You know, she's a lot older, a lot fragile, which completely pissed me off. So I run after this guy. He's noticing me running towards him. So the guy takes off. One of the outside security officers notices this dude, so he runs after him. Mm-hmm. He gets in his vehicle, and he starts taunting me, you know. And, you know, I'm already, I completely failed to hold my composure. So I completely just, you know, punched his window.
And he had video. Oh, well, somebody took video of this. But listen, I'm going to tell you right now. You said you lost control. My guy, you looked like you were in total control, because the way you smashed that fucking glass, bro, it looked like, I shit you not, it looked like a fucking scene out of a fucking Marvel movie. He just came and he was like, Hulk, smash, and then, pah, just come in. And you know what's funny? Usually when people want to break in through a door, through glass or window, they, like, wind up and, like, throw back. You were just like, bro, it looked like you were, like, just, like, love tapping a fuck. Like, you were, like, giving a little tap of, like, a chum tap to a friend. Like, haha, you're so funny, clip, little tap. Like, bro, that's how you look like when you punch that window. But then, you know, it's just like, just came falling apart. So when you punched that fucking, because listen, you said you didn't keep your composure, but I'm gonna keep it a stack. You went beyond the Call of Duty, and you were a good Samaritan, because this guy fucked around with the old lady, man. Like, you don't listen. We need to start treating our fucking our senior citizens with some fucking respect, all right? Because we're seeing a lot of people, like, a lot of senior citizens get disrespected. A lot of Latino vendors and all this other stuff get disrespected too. Like, listen, show your elderly some respect. I know you out here trying to, this is the age of the quote unquote savage, and everybody wants to be cool and cold blooded, but the reality, ain't nothing cool or cold blooded about fucking disrespecting elderly people, because I'm gonna tell you right now, they're more wiser than you'll ever fucking know. And the fact of the matter is that every single, like, your wisdom and your mindset at this age right now was brought upon by somebody who was older than you, because they lived through that shit. So Ariel, I applaud you for what you did, because what you did was you stood up for a generation that for so long has been put down as, like, the boomer generation, which granted, some people still have that boomer mentality, but in all honesty, there's a lot of wisdom that comes from listening to old people. And that's why people have connections with, like, their grandparents or, like, older relatives and stuff like that too. So what you did was, like you said, your means of being a protector, because you know for a fact, like, although they're old, they're wise, but they still can't, like, they're ill bodied because, you know, time catches up with everybody. Yeah. And you're showing that you at this young age, where you're built, you have a nice physique, you're using that for good by protecting these people who at a certain point might even feel defenses, especially given today's time and today's age. But going back to the story, like, did you get a look at the guy's face when you cracked open that window? What, was he shitting himself? Did you smell the fucking shit coming from his guy's pants from shitting himself, or what the fuck's up?
See, I've noticed that people have told me before that you can tell how someone's feeling. As soon as that glass broke, the guy noticed that he fucked up and he was messing with
it was at this moment he knew he fucked up.
Yeah, he just didn't understand how to turn on his car or anything. He just completely lost all form of control over his body. One of my guards was there, so he pushed me out. He basically mazed the guy in his vehicle. The guy exited the car, and you know, he was able to get handcuffed. Our officers, our security officers, that you know, they have the security vest and all that stuff. Uh-huh. They're off-duty cops, so they can arrest people whenever they want. So they took this guy in with no problem. They took him in. They pressed him for charges, especially because he assaulted one of the cashiers.
What a cunt.
Yeah, piece of shit. But the reason I say I lost control is because, you know, I had to use physical force to get what I wanted. And at the end of the day, a lot of people feel that way, which is completely understandable because at the end of the day, we're all animals. Our human instincts, we see ourselves as better, more high-tech beings, but we're still animals. That force is going to come out of us.
We were all monkeys at one point. And we still kind of have some of those mammal type instincts, you know. Sometimes we, you know, cause this boy Ariel get gorilla, but in the good way, like the sense of like you don't push the man's buttons, he'll be cool, but fuck around and be like, oh, killing it. But nonetheless, continue.
Yeah, so it comes back to that verbal judo, you know. You just got to talk people down. This is why I believe that a lot of people should understand who they are and how they feel about certain things. And just, you know, at the end of the day, stay away from certain things that, you know, provoke you to do animalistic things. It's pretty hard to stay away from, especially nowadays, because a lot of people get irritated by certain things that they see.
Oh, definitely.
A lot of people get offended by things that they hear, or people get offended for other people, which is completely insane. Yeah, I'm just like, what the hell's wrong with you? So this kind of brings me to a point that I want to talk to. I wanted to converse with you.
Definitely.
What's your point of view in people that feel offended for other people when a certain person, like, let's say me as myself, I'm a Hispanic male, and this white male comes out of nowhere because someone called me a beaner, and they're the ones getting offended when I'm just laughing about it. You know, me as myself, I've learned that, you know, this is just words. You're not going to hurt me with words.
It's ignorance at its finest. Yeah.
But this guy right here is making it a problem by getting physical with this other person because he called me a beaner. So what's your point of view on that?
Oh, definitely. I can definitely put a weigh in on that. So because I trust me, I've been on the wrong end of a lot of things. Like, I myself have personally been, like, racially profiled and, like, even to the point, like, even, like, I've even been straight up threatened because of my race. I remember when I was working in the Midwest, me and my African-American coworker, we were working in a campaign, and we legit got chased down by a bunch of fucking racist redneck fucking Cletus cousin fucking motherfuckers who were just like because the whole so let me go into that story real quick. So what happened was, so me and my friend were working on a campaign, and our job was simple. We knock on doors, let people know about our candidate, and that's it. We don't bother people. We don't, like, they even told us to, if they're not interested in hearing our story, bounce, leave to the next one. So we pull up to this lady's house. My friend tries to go up and talk to her. She's not interested. We're not pushing the issue. We're like, listen, ma'am, if you're not interested, that's perfectly fine, have a nice day, continue. And so I guess for some reason, because I was Mexican and my friend was black, and we were the, like, I guess in a Caucasian populated area. So, you know, I guess people thought that kind of suspicious. So instead of being like, being kind enough to just call the cops, instead of calling the cops, she called on, I guess, some people that lived near her. And they kind of acted as their own justice, and they started following us for a cool while. And then next thing you know, like, we were noticing that they were following us, and we were like, hey, maybe, like, let's try to see if they're, like, trying to get something from us. And foolishly, we pulled into a one-way dirt road because it's Missouri, the Midwest. Sometimes you run into those, like, you know, dirt roads and stuff like that. And next thing you know, like, they trap us. They, like, park behind us, and they stop us from, like, and they block us from getting out or reversing or anything like that too. And they all get out of the truck like gangster style, like 6-7 of these motherfuckers, because some of them were in the trunk. They go in, they start banging on our windows, shaking our car. They're like, what the fuck are y'all doing out here? Y'all trying to rob people and this and that. Long story short, the lady called them and basically said that we were trying to rob her
because apparently robbers go up to and knock on the door and try to talk to her about an election that's coming up. I don't know, but long story short, she saw a fucking spick and a fucking nigger. I don't want to, I know, I'm being very fucking vulgar with my language, but I'm gonna keep it a stack. Yeah. That's how they looked at us. Yeah. They saw a spick and they saw a fucking nigger and they were like, I don't like them here in this environment. I feel threatened, apparently. And instead of calling the cops, they called on people that they thought would bring their own form of justice. They were ready to kick our asses and fucking kill us.
Those are the dangerous people. Those are extremely dangerous people.
Because we were on a one dirt road, yeah, there, and we were in the middle of fucking nowhere. If they wanted to, they can kill us, leave us on the fucking ditch. We wouldn't. It would take days before they would fucking find us. And the fact that we were able to keep our fucking cool, keep ourselves together, and we were like, listen, we're with a campaign. We showed them our IDs. They're like, bro, call the cops, please, if anything, because we're the ones that are feeling threatened to this point. And then long story short, thankfully, by the grace of God, they saw that we definitely weren't criminals, because we fucking weren't. You know, we were people working a fucking election. And then all of a sudden, they're just like, okay, whatever. And then they drive off. And then we pass by this lady's house. They stop us one more time and they try to like scold us, talking about, y'all can't just be walking around here, and like basically making up excuses to that ultimately came up to the point of like, we don't want y'all here. Yeah. We don't want y'all here. And they made it very clear, because they were so ignorant about the whole thing. I'm like, listen, you couldn't call the cops and anybody, but rather instead you called these random people who look like they're ready to kill us and were basically ready to kill us if they wanted to and stuff like that.
One thing that people, if you live in a city, California, New York, I know there's other cities, but I refer to California, New York, because most people that lived in New York and California, you've never been out to the country. So you don't understand that these people don't have much to do. So what do when you have nothing to do? You train. You shoot stuff. So these people are highly trained shooters. So the fact that they let them go, that lets you know that these people are understanding, and you know they have a broader mind of certain things.
Yeah, they definitely were. Yeah, because I'm gonna keep it a stack. Like they could have killed us, but thankfully through the grace of God, we were able to make it out. But yeah, like that just shows you like people's like inability to really like think first and react later. And that's why I always look at like Ariel as a prime example of someone who's like who dives nose first into environments of danger, but still has a calm, cool, complex attitude about that type of stuff. And I feel like that's very vital, because me and him are both people who are big Second Amendment advocators. We definitely believe that we should all own guns, especially people of color, black and brown people. Don't be afraid to buy guns. You're Americans, you have rights too. If anything, we encourage y'all to buy more fucking guns, because we got to make sure that the fucking people know that we're exercising our rights and stuff like that.
If you are first generation born in the U.S., I'm talking to you, all you people that, you know, you have illegal parents, or, you know, someone in your family is illegal, you should get a gun. If you're born here, you're U.S. made, get a gun. Don't be scared to get a gun,
especially with like what's going on right now with everybody talking about how police aren't to be trustworthy. Exactly. Fine, be your own security, because that's the whole point of the Second Amendment, was to be your own security when the government fails, as it always does when trying to provide your own security. So, and that's why this boy Ariel stays packing. So Ariel, what can you tell people about like at least your arsenal in terms of like what you carry? Because you carry quite a variety of stuff, but you're highly trained, you're professional. Like, this man is like, I'm telling you, he's a fucking one-man army, bro. So let the people know about your arsenal and basically, like, let the criminal, the would-be criminals out there know what you pack. And so when they come by your house, they know it's not the one, chief.
So I realized the importance of my parents knowing how to use weapons. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, I would come home late. A lot of people will follow me home, which is crazy. But they understood that I was one of the guys there that was going to do things by the book and understand that, not straight by the book, because I understand stuff that's written down tends to be a little bit, awkward. So, I did whatever I thought was best with my own mind, my own thoughts, my own beliefs, and certain people followed me home. So what's better way to protect myself than to teach the people that are waiting for me at home to use weapons, you know? So, one story, I was working at this job that I have right now, and this crew followed me home. I knew it was the crew because when I stopped them, it was the same BMW that pulled up, and it was the same BMW waiting for me when I got off of work.
Oh, shit.
So, when I was rolling home, I was like, I'm packing ready, so I'm ready to go, but I'm pretty sure there's more than one person in there.
Yeah.
That's how it was with the truck in Missouri too. Yeah, dead ass. Like, we thought it was just the people in the truck, but then, as you know, some fools were hiding in like the back part, and then yeah, it was like a fucking militia. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, and you know, you before you do anything when it comes to something violent or dangerous, read your situation. Understand that awareness should be first. Decision making should be second, and you know, just act on certain things. Don't overthink stuff. So I called my mom. I'm like, hey, mom, go to my room in the closet. There's going to be an AR. It's already loaded. Go to the front yard and, you know, just wait for me to pull up and then aim at the car behind me. So as I pull up to the house, you know, I was already rolling around. You know, I was going all over the place. You know, I tried to do turns, but they were on my ass. And I was like, all right, so if they want to fight, we're going to fight.
Oh, shit. Now mama bear in this bitch, too.
Yeah, so shout out to my mom. And so I put up in front of my driveway. They noticed the gun pointing at them because my mom had the light on you know, my rifle.
It was them attachments on her, you feel me?
It was already pointing at the car behind me. I pull out, you know, I take out my pistol. I carry a Glock 19 because, you know, that's the easiest. It's not going to kill you if I shoot you twice anywhere in your body.
Glock is like the fucking coke of fucking guns, you know? It's the go-to.
Yeah, Glocks are very reliable. But the 19, you know, it's a small bullet. It's not going to kill you. It's not a 45. So, you know, I pull up, take out my Glock. I run towards the car, and I point it right in the guy's face. And I'm like, you've been following me for a while. I'm going to kill you if you do not leave right now. If you do not leave right now, I will kill you. So you can either call the cops or I will murder you right now. So the guy called the cops. They came. We explained the whole situation. They ended up taking the guys. I explained that, you know, I worked security and I stopped the brother of the guy that was following me around, and they basically wanted retaliation. But at the end of the day, the fact that my mom was there waiting with a gun basically made me more threatening when I rolled up with my gun.
Fuck! So you heard it here first. This man literally called his mama, was like, say no mas, mijo. I got you, bet. With the AR-15, like, she about to fucking go into the war zone. Fuck, that's what I'm telling you, man. That's what I mean by telling you that Errol is a fucking complete savage. But if you pay attention to his story that he just said, listen to how cool, calm, and collective this man is. And that just shows you, like, especially with what's going on right now, too, with all the cops, like, killing all these people and stuff like that, too. Like, you're someone that has, a job somewhat in law enforcement. Yeah. Like, you're security, you protect and you serve and stuff like that, too. What do you feel like you do better than all these cops that you're seeing that are killing innocent people and, like, just, you know, going about things in the wrong way?
So, for all the people who are out there that hate on cops, you might want to rethink things. Why is it that firefighters need a college diploma to be able to become a firefighter? Why is it that nurses or EMTs need a college diploma to be in that field, but cops go straight out of high school? That doesn't make sense to me. So if you want to be a cop, you need to go to school. You need to understand how people react. You need to understand how to read people, how to read certain situations, because people act differently in certain situations.
So what you're saying is, because I definitely can agree with that, you feel like because a higher education is expected in all other forms of practices, like the medical or firefighter and stuff like that too, you think the same expectation should be met with law enforcement? Because definitely, I feel like, I know for a fact, I mean, I went to college, and listen, I'm not saying I'm ready to be the next fucking, you know, great detective or anything, but, like, college does teach you an aspect of, like, critical thinking and analyzing and definitely, you know, being aware of your situations and environments and people and things like that, too, because, like, the way you go about your security, I could definitely tell Ariel there's an added sense of, like, this psychological aspect to where you're examining the person you're dealing with, you're examining the situation and, like, a lot of other things that maybe, you know, cops in the heat of the moment don't think about. So I feel like, so let me ask you this then, to kind of bounce off of that. What do you feel like is a necessity that needs to be put upon law enforcement nowadays for the people to, like, restore at least a bit of trust in them, you know?
Well, definitely they need to understand that they need to hire more ghetto people, you know, not necessarily people who act up as ghetto, but people who were brought up in the ghetto
and know the environment. Yeah. Especially,
I've noticed that my partners who were brought up near Brentwood or, you know, those, you know, wealthy areas,
suburban,
yeah, they are a lot more quick to act on certain things physically than just reading them through. Mm. whenever I see.
So real quick before I, sorry to interrupt, but so what you're saying is you want to have that level of environmental experience to where you can have people understand the nature of their environment.
Definitely. See, in the military, we have people who do certain operations who we consider, you know, these guys are here to, you know, fuck shit up. How is it that they usually never fuck up. They usually never show up to a random ass, you know, house and blow it up and look for someone that's not there. But we have SWAT members who roll up to gamers playing video games just because someone else called them and these gamers get shot up. Or why is it that they do, you know, side stops, you know, on the freeway or on the road and they end up shooting this family because they were scared?
Or like fucking with Breonna Taylor, that like they just barged into her house, no warrant, no nothing, walking in, shot her while she was fucking sleeping. Like,
yeah,
that just shows you, like, yeah, the lack of like initiative there is in terms of critical thinking. Yeah, yeah.
Because in the military, if you're infantry, most people don't know this, you do training for an entire year before you go to combat. And most people are like, oh, you do your 3 months boot camp and then you go to war. No, you do 3 months of boot camp. Then you go do maybe 2-4 months to your designated MOS. And then you do some more training and then you get sent out to the field.
Okay.
After a year. But that's a whole year of you learning how people act, other people's stories. You know, this guy comes in, he talks to you about his first year, you know, doing, you know, raids out in Afghanistan. And you learn certain things and you learn how not to fuck up. But these cops are going to training for like 3 months and then they get sent out to the field. Beginner cops get the shittiest jobs, which means they patrol around in the ghetto and end up shooting little kids with toy guns. You know, they end up beating up people that don't need to get beat up. Or they go against someone, you know, that has mental problems, which is pretty high in the States because we don't have stuff to worry about. That's one thing that I need people to understand. We are a first world country, which gives us less issues than other people. Other people have to worry about the water they drink, the food they get, if they're going to eat, their jobs. A lot of us don't have to worry about that stuff.
If they're even going to fucking live to see tomorrow, you know?
Exactly. So we create what is considered. That's why Americans, Europeans were so, you know, brought up in this like, oh, there's so many mental illnesses. And it's not really mental issues. It's just normal human, you know, failures that we have. We get bored. So we have to blame stuff on other things. That's where anxiety comes in. That's where stress comes in. That's where all these other things come in. It's just because we have really not much to complain about. If you see what people, you know, in Africa, India, certain parts of China.
It's all those Middle Eastern countries that we went to war with, yeah, and stuff like that.
Honduras, Mexico,
yeah.
Salvador. People that don't have jack shit but a mudded house, dirt floors.
And fucking well.
Yeah. If you ask them what their issues are, they're not issues to us.
Yeah.
Those are, you would never even think that's a problem. Oh, you have to clean out your gutters because, you know, fucking rats are dead in there. You have to clean out your fucking sewers because you have dead, you know, shit all over it. When was the last time you cleaned the sewer?
Yeah, for real. Like, personally, yourself. You know, yeah, you have people that do that for you. You kind of almost, and that's the thing that, like, you know, I feel like it's definitely one thing that, like, you yourself are understanding, and that's why you have that mentality that you have, is that you're able to put yourself in the situation of people that not a lot of us think about, the less fortunate, and the people that definitely have a whole different aspect of what it is to have the struggle. Because, you know, we're from South Central, we have our own struggles, but everywhere around the world people have their own struggles that vary. Some are way worse than ours, some are less lighter than ours, but the fact of the matter is, like, you understood and grasped your struggle, quote unquote, and you adapt to that. And I feel like that's kind of what you're kind of saying right now too, is like, you have to realize other people's struggles and, like, learn to adapt to your own, because everybody's different at the end of the day, you know? So do you feel like, you know, like, with the way you're going about life right now, like, what do you feel like people need to start doing differently at least?
Well, to keep it in the, you know, police way, most police officers should we have more training,
uh-huh,
a lot more training, should have a lot more, you know, just understand how to read, you know, body language.
And situations, too.
Situations.
Yeah, because how many fucking stories have you heard of, like, cops, like, whipping out their fucking guns and going trigger happy because they thought somebody was reaching for a gun when they told them to go get their fucking license? Hello, where the fuck is their fucking license? In their wallet. And where's in their wallet? In their fucking pockets. Like,
see, people have easy instincts. You either run, you fight, or you freeze. That's literally the only thing I've ever seen people do when they're in a moment of, like, dire need. You either run, you fight, or you freeze. And if this person is digging all over their pockets when you have a maybe 30, 15 guns pointing at him, what do you think is he looking for? He's looking for comfort. Not all people have weapons on them.
Exactly.
Especially here in California.
Even though, here in California.
Not a lot of legal people have guns here. Exactly. You know, a lot of illegal, a lot of, you know, crime, a lot of thugs have guns, but these are guns that, you know, they're not traced, which a lot of people don't understand, but
that's a whole different topic for a whole story. But we'll get into that. It's just the first part.
You just need to understand that you need to read people. If you're going to be an officer of anywhere in the United States, you have to read people, understand that there's people that are going to freak out when they see you. Some people don't freak out because, you know, there's nothing to hide. But most people in the ghetto are brought up to fear cops.
Yeah.
So what are we supposed
to do? And vice versa. Like, so many cops are told, like, well, these ghetto areas are the ones with the highest amount of crime infestation. So therefore, be on high alert. But their idea of high alert is to just treat everybody as criminals. And that's not the right idea of high alert. Like you said, like, we all have our own perceptions on how we came up, you know, and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, we also have a brain to, like, really put two and two together, especially, like you said, it's a field. Like, police work is basically, like, you have life or death in your fucking hands. So that in itself already requires a certain level of education. And the fact that that certain level of education isn't the standard for this, like, you know, for this organization, that just shows you, like, already that there's a lot of problems within that organization and things like that. So, like, I definitely agree with you on that aspect, because you're security, you carry a Glock, you have a badge, you have all this stuff, but, like, you're, from the stories you tell, you definitely are someone that likes to deal with situations with words, or, like, if God forbid, more, at least with, you know, physical altercations, rather than, like, having to resort to, like, your peace, because, you know, your peace is, like, you know, like they say, your peace is your last resort, yeah. And for the most part, I've seen that you've hardly had to use that, so that's another reason why, like, you know, I'm so glad that Ariel came onto the show, because he's a prime example of someone who is, you know, like, your ideal man is in, like, someone who's tough and ready for battle, but at the end of the day has enough sanity and enough head on his shoulders to, like, have that self-control and that realization that ultimately, like, we don't have to be trigger happy, we don't have to be this, we don't have to be that. Like, what we need to be is cool, calm, and collective, and aware, and just present in the certain situation. Correct?
Yeah, most definitely. People just need to understand that. Stop fearing other people. I've been doing security work armed for 6 years now. Uh-huh. 6 to 5 years now. And I've never had to pull my gun on somebody.
Wow.
Never. I've gotten into some beatdowns. I've gotten down with a couple of people. You know, I've tased a couple of people. But I've never had to bring out my weapon, because I understand that that's a risk, but I don't assume everybody's packing. And I try to read people, read situations. That's one issue that I actually took a test to see if I was psychotic, because I can't walk into a room without sizing people up, reading people, seeing what they're doing. And
that's the security mentality.
That's a lot of things that psychotic people have, you know. So psychopaths have, they read people. And I was freaking out. I was like, what the hell's wrong with me? You know, I look at someone, I'm like, either you can be a friendly or I can kill you.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's completely fucked up. So I took a test, and I'm not, because I have compassion towards animals and other humans. And I feel a need to protect people. But it's just that fact that I feel a need to be that person that's there, you know, be a gray man, someone that you don't really notice. And I just come there and, you know, do stuff, even though I'm pretty noticeable.
Yeah. No, but, like, ultimately, like, what you're trying to say is, and I think this is the main thing that we need to realize here with our guest, is that this boy, Ariel, you're balanced. You're ready for the action, for the savagery at the drop of a dime, but you still understand, like, compassion and understanding, and you treat everyone as an equal. And I feel like that's very important, and I feel like we definitely need to shine a light on more people like you, who are a prime example of someone that can have that balance, because you definitely are seeing a lot of people nowadays who are just like, oh, like, I it's either one or the other. You have to be either this type of person or that type of person. But at the end of the day, like, nobody really steps back and be like, well, why can't there be a mixture of both, and why can't there be, like, that even balance? And I definitely feel like that's the way, like, that's Ariel, in a sense. Like, this is a prime example of someone who is true balance, of someone who is ready to be the protector, but at the same time respects those that he protects. It's a prime example of what an ideal human being should have in terms of at least the morale setting, you know? And goddamn, Mario, I don't know what else to say, man. Like, we've reached the 1 hour mark already, like, fucking minutes ago, but I don't give a fucking shit, because honestly, like, you've been a very interesting guest on this podcast, and you definitely seem to have a lot of insight. One thing's for sure, because we have reached the 1 hour mark, we do have to bring this to an end, but I know for a fact I'll have you back on this podcast, because I definitely feel like you have a lot of insight and a lot of knowledge when it comes to, you know, life philosophies and just the way you go about life. Real quick, before we, like, go, what are some parting words you want to leave to the people? Maybe you want to shout out, you know, where they can find you and things like that. But, like, I'm going to give you this quick couple minutes to kind of talk, speak your piece, and kind of let the world know what you're about. And, you know, if you want people to follow you, they can follow you. Or if you just want to leave them with some kind words and some food for thought, you know, go right ahead.
So lately in our country, I've seen a lot of people, you know, hate on the United States. Mm-hmm. I understand that a lot of people feel like this country hasn't done much for them. But it's not the country. It usually falls onto the government. You know, you have to understand that the United States, it's you as a person. If you're born here or not, you're still an American. You have a lot to do in this world, a lot of things to change. But don't ever, you know, just understand that you have to have a certain hate towards people. You have to understand that with change comes a lot of responsibility. And it's not just one certain person. Everybody needs to change to make a difference. And we just can't bring back, you know, I've seen people say that, you know, we need to treat a certain person the way they treated us to make them understand. But nothing like that's going to bring difference, or nothing like that's going to bring change. You have to understand that you have to teach this person better and just move forward for a better tomorrow. That's how I feel it.
Oh, couldn't have said it any better myself. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another installment of the Tony Talks podcast. I want to give a big thank you to my guest, Ariel Troches, for coming through and, you know, coming in clutch right now. Definitely, this is not the last you've seen of him. I will definitely have him back on the podcast to talk about other things like that, too. If you guys have any ideas on what you guys want to hear from us in terms of the things we talk about, feel free to let me know on my Instagram @TonyTalksPC, or my personal Instagram for myself @Tony_McBadluck. They can find Ariel on Instagram
@OneBlink_USA.
Don't worry, I'll have all of that stuff in the description information. This has been another installment of the Tony Talks podcast. My name is Anthony Lopez.
My name is Ariel.
And thank you so much for joining us. Have yourself a beautiful day. Stay beautiful, stay lovely, but most importantly, stay safe. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.